Hello and welcome to episode 50 of Talking Talkie. Big day to celebrate. We're going to talk about our two defeats. With me today is Matthew Roberts.
Good evening.
And Matt Putman.
Hello, I am also here.
So first of all, let's have a little bit of a chat about the Barnet game. There was a really good attendance from the Talkie fans, and Matthew, you were there.
I was, yes. I don't know how many fans there were exactly, because they never actually gave attendance.
I think there was 500.
I thought about between 300 and 400 or so, but I've seen people say 250 to 600 or so, and it was brilliant, as in the support was. The performance, not quite so much. I thought we were on the back foot from the very beginning. They were passing it around quite quickly, and we didn't really, we weren't really able to get a foothold in the game at all. We couldn't get close to them. I mean, Barnet, they're not world beaters. They're not the best team in the division by a country mile, but we were second best throughout the entire game. And when we did get the ball, it was slow, ponderous, and it was always sideways, more sideways. We never went forward, go back. Then after we'd had the ball for quite a long time, we'd get bored of that and pump it up long, and it would just be recycled by their defence, who would send it straight back at us. And that was pretty much the story of most of the half, to be fair. The only real chance we had was our disallowed goal, which was down the other end. So I couldn't tell at the time if it was actually offside or not. But I saw the highlights and I thought, yeah, it probably was. I don't know if anybody, if you might have a different opinion on that. But
well, he was very tight, wasn't he?
That was the thing,
somebody put a still of it on Twitter, and he looks offside. That's the first thing to say, is that the chances are he was probably, by letter of the law, offside. The still that was taken was kind of a bit of a second after the ball had been nodded through, and to me, the right back, or the player furthest towards the line or towards the camera from a Barnet perspective, looks like there's a chance he's kind of level-ish with Sinclair. The issue I've got is, A, under the Wenger proposal, which I think is kind of almost its official name now, the idea that any part of you being onside renders all of you onside, rather than the way it is now, any part of you being offside makes you offside, would have definitely meant that goal would have stood. And that's a better way to interpret the rule anyway. And B, the bloke scored with an unopposed overhead kick from 8 yards that the goalkeeper couldn't have got hold of if he'd have had a week to train for it, an advance notice, and a friend to help him out. The fact that Sinclair's arse may or may not have been kind of half his arse's width ahead of a defender that was 15 yards away was neither here nor there as to whether the ball ended up in the back of the net. You know, you think about Gazza's in 96, if he'd have been offside, he'd have got his stud on that ball and it'd have gone in the back of the net and we'd have won Euro 96. But he was onside, so he missed it. That made a difference. Sinclair's overhead? Yeah. No, the same result would have come if he'd been a couple of inches one way, a couple of inches the other. So it's nonsense. But letter of the law says if you're ahead of the last man, you're nearer the opponent's goal line than both the ball and the second last defender at the time the ball is played, then you're offside. Chances are, yeah, he probably was offside, but it's very close.
Yeah, I think even if we had scored that, I think we still probably wouldn't have got anything out of the game anyway. The Barnet were better than us for pretty much 90 minutes, apart from about 10 minutes spell in the second half after, you know, directly after halftime when we came back out and we actually started using the width of the pitch. We started passing it around quite well because that was my complaint with the entire game. We were playing so narrow. Our wide midfielders, they're not wingers, our wide midfielders had nothing to do. And when they did get the ball, they'd run forward a little bit. Even if there's loads of space, they'd run forward a little bit and then immediately cut inside. I thought, have a go, just go forward, try something. It's another thing when we would make silly mistakes when passing the ball. And these weren't sort of expansive, tricky passes or anything. We just pass it to opposition players or just not the ball not reach our own players. So I don't really have a problem if you make a mistake and you're passing it, you're making a challenging ball, you're trying something interesting, but not when it's
a routine 10-yard, 15-yard pass. You remember, like, Union, did both of you see Union? You both around for...
I did, yes.
For OK.
Yeah. So, you'll
remember that time was that kind of before he got really, really good and the players around him learned that he could do things that seemed to them to be impossible, Union used to put ball after ball out for goal kicks because he would see a pass and he was capable of creating a pass that the rest of the team, being sort of good but not exceptional League Two players, just didn't even think of. But Union would see it, and that's kind of where his extra talent was. And it was kind of frustrating. There were people losing their temper with him, as they did with Luke Young subsequently, and as they do with Armani Little now, where these guys are technically capable of making passes for runs that their teammates don't see. Now, part of it is part of the skill of being a footballer is being able to play with your teammates, obviously. But these guys, it's got to come a point where you've got to go, I'd rather we had a central midfielder like Little or a wide man, say like Andrews, who only had a 40% pass completion rate. But when he got those 4 in 10 that got to their intended receiver were like shots on goal. That's what they resulted in. I'm not really interested in us having a Jordan Henderson who comes out of a Liverpool game with 100% pass completion rate. And then you look at where those passes have gone and they've gone 6 yards one way and 4 yards the other, just sideways, complete waste of time. Why is he on the pitch? You could put a dustbin on the pitch and just get other players to play 1-2s with it and have the same result. I want a guy not to have a particularly good pass completion rate, but I want him to have a not particularly good pass completion rate because he's trying things to unlock the opposition. More on that, I think, when we come to the Aldershot review, but we're on by now.
Little is that player who he wasn't particularly great on Saturday against Barnet, well, nobody was, but he was the only one who was thinking, where can I put this in some sort of dangerous position, I thought. And he's the one player in the squad who has that moment of quality, which nobody else seems to have at the moment, where, you know, 9 times out of 10, he may miss that free kick, but he got the right one on Saturday. And it was a brilliant free kick. I don't know how many yards out was it, like 25 yards out, and curled it straight to the top corner. The keeper, full stretch, can't get anywhere near it. And nobody else on the pitch would have done that.
I rather liked the idea that the two blokes lining up for it were Moxie a Little. And yeah. Mox bothered stepping over it. It's like, if this goalkeeper has seen so much as 2 minutes of video, he knows who he's taking this. He's not going to be... If Andrews had been on the pitch and Andrews had lined up on the other side, where Mox was, you'd probably have gone, I don't know which of the two is taking this. But like, seeing Moxie a Little... It's like, you know, you turn up in your Formula One garage and there's Nigel from the petrol station and Lewis Hamilton. You're like, which one's going to be driving the car? We don't know. You do. It's the black guy, isn't it? Come on. That's ridiculous. Absolutely preposterous. So, yeah, I like the optimism of hoping that was that. But I wish I'd bloody got it on video now, because I called that free kick. Immediately, I said, right, as soon as Little went there, because Little won it, got chopped down in, again, surprisingly similar circumstances to something that happened in the bloody Aldershot game for their goal. And he wanted the free kick. All he wanted was the free kick, really. He didn't kind of want to burst into the box and have a shot, something to do with confidence, maybe, I don't know, or maybe he just figured, dead ball, we've trained for this, I can probably put this in. What he preferred was the free kick. That's what he got. As soon as he went down, I went, right, I'll tell you what's happening here. Moxie's stepping over it. It's going to go over the wall to the goalie's right, and it's going in. And
yeah, I said it. I said it was little territory to my mate, and I was nervous. And I'm glad I was proved right. But yeah. I didn't want to be one of those people who films every single free kick and set piece, because that would be unconscionable.
No, just what are you doing? Are you there to enjoy the game, or are you there to make your editorial debut? I mean, knock it off. Just, if you want to film it, there'll be highlights, it'll be a 10-minute highlights package filmed in 1080p with like good quality sound and that, not some idiot with an iPhone stood there 15 yards away. He's a 38.
You just call Matthew an idiot?
No. Would I do that, honestly?
I think from watching the highlights myself, I was pretty appalled by how much we got tackled on the, like, all the time. Just felt like we were losing the ball all the time.
So slow.
Yeah, just moving too slow. And like you said, no whip at all. I felt like Matt kept us in the game quite a few times. And I, from the highlights I saw, I felt like it was a fair result. I'm surprised we even got one.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the other surprising thing was how few fans Barnet had. I couldn't really understand. It was like a Saturday 3 o'clock game and their ground was almost empty. It's really sad to see.
I saw a Barnet fan mention on Twitter the reason for that terrace being closed. I don't know, I assume this is true, and they said that they were hoping to get some planning permission for a bigger stand, or to knock it down or something like that and rebuild something else, and that all fell through, and apparently that stand isn't fit for, well, human habitation at the moment, which I don't know how that's the case, because it was only built about 7 years ago or so.
Yeah, I mean, it looks quite
God
nice.
God knows who built it. It's a nice ground. They've got a really nice setup, and then you stick all your fans in one or two-thirds of one stand. That looks really strange.
Well, I mean, they all fit in two-thirds of one stand, didn't they? In fairness, that
looks
a real sorry sight with three sides open. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
One person every about 50 seats.
I mean, for the Barnet team, that can't be an easy ground to play in then. You've just got people sort of on that one bit,
no,
you know.
Well, it's usual bloody story, isn't it? When clubs have got grounds they just don't need. Looking at you, Chesterfield. You know, with their, like, whatever you can get in that hive, 9,000-10,000 people away, a complete waste of time. Barnet just are not going to get that number of fans in. There was nothing wrong with Underhill, apart from the fact that you could have launched jets off the pitch, could have got them up into the air quite nicely from one end of the pitch to the other. And the floodlights, I don't think, were great, if I remember rightly. But broadly, it was fine. There was just about enough parking around, quite a nice little park to go in before the game. Perfectly convenient location. Didn't need all this ridiculous new bloody ground, but built it anyway. And it just, for it, if that is right, some of it's been bloody condemned and they're looking for planning permission and stuff. Right? It's like, what? Who signs off on these decisions? I don't care. It's Barnet. I couldn't care less. But like, what were you playing at? You know, how do you
to be fair, this is the same club which started the season without a chef on match day, so they couldn't get any food and they had to go out and buy Foster's and things, didn't they? So it's brilliant. I'm just glad that the beer situation had resolved itself by the time that we went.
Why were we? I mean, I know why. I'm going to ask a question that I actually know the answer to, which is a bit stupid, but like, don't book a wedding for 3 o'clock. On a match day, you've got to believe, because it was a bloody Hindi wedding or something, you've got to believe that 500 Torquay fans, one of whom is Jules Nixon, are probably going to spend more on beer in the big bar than a Hindi wedding, surely.
Oh, I don't know. Hindi weddings are very boozy.
Are they?
Yeah.
Yeah, like we arrived at the same time as everybody was turning up, and I thought, hang on, have we got something wrong here? And I thought, that's our bar, isn't it? That's the one we were in last time. And I thought they'd set out a bit nice for us. They've got all nice table covers and seat covers and all that sort of thing. And then we were directed into the Legends Bar, which was a bit of an optimistic type.
Going back to the game then.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Before we move on to Aldershot, did either of you see anything positive on Saturday that sort of stood out and you felt was a good thing rather than just negatives for the day? Don't go completely silent on me.
we did quite well for about 10 minutes in the second half. We started really pressing the ground. We were moving very quickly. And I thought, oh, this is good. The fans were getting right up as well. And then I thought, you know, we could do this. And then even when they scored their second, which is an absolute travesty, I thought, we can still get something out of this. And then I quickly realised that, hang on, no, we've completely lost it. We were deflated and we had no hope after they scored their second. So we just retreated into ourselves. I appreciate that starting off the positive.
What did I like? I like Mac. I think it's probably incumbent upon us to mention McDonald, who evidently is a better goalkeeper, more consistent goalkeeper than he's been for us in his previous time here. I can only reasonably put that down to something to do with Colv not being here, breathing down his neck. Mac, it seems, I mean, he's under no pressure, is he? Let's be honest. Chicken wings and Marcin are never going to force their way ahead of him in the pecking order. Not even if Mac turns up drunk on a match day. He could be out of his tree at 2 o'clock on a Saturday at Plainmoor, and Johnson would probably rather ply him with coffee than try and put chicken wings in goal. So he's got no pressure for his place, and it seems as though a low pressure environment without having probably a better goalkeeper than him, Inkov, in all honesty, breathing down his neck for a place in the team, that's probably, or it seems to be, doing wonders for him. So I think probably mentioning McDonald and the fact that, as you said, Roe, he did kind of keep us in the game and made a couple of good saves. And he comes and gets the ball really nicely now. His decision-making is much better. His kicking's very good now. He hasn't made a real rick with any of those. My problem with Mac used to be that he would have a blinder in game one for being included, and by about game five, he'd have a Weymouth away, I think it was, where it was only because he scored four and he threw three in his own net. He hasn't done that. I don't want to say yet, but if the cap fits, he hasn't done that yet. And that's,
he was in quite a nice position coming in as well, wasn't he? Because, you know, being the saviour position, it's always like a nice role to fill. You know, I'm coming back, I'm going to be good for you guys, you're in a bit, you're stuck. And so he sort of entered on a high, the way he came back and showed a picture of him driving down the motorway, you know, it was all kind of positive, and so I can see that he's doing well. From the highlights that I watched
as well.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, definitely. You can feel that, right? And he enjoys sort of engaging with the fans. And you're right, his kick is good. It's a lot better than Simon Rayner's ever used to be. So.
Oh, Simon Rayner and that bloody billboard.
Remember, everybody would run to the other side of the pitch and his kick would go the other way.
Would go out of the left hand side. Yeah. In front of the grandstand, there was one billboard that I swear they had to replace about every 4 or 5 home games. Because he just used to knock all the glue off the back.
He was such a tall, imposing, good shot stopper, but his kick was terrible every time. So moving on to Aldershot then. Matt, you were at the game on Tuesday. It sounded like we didn't really get the right result on Tuesday.
No, we certainly didn't. Let's start with goalkeepers and kicking, because their goalkeeper could not kick for love nor money. And I don't mean, like, under pressure, being chased down by Sinclair after a ropey back pass on a bobbly pitch. I mean, had basically the entire pitch to himself, or the entire half to himself, and managed to punt the ball 3 or 4 times straight out of play, a la Simon Rayner. It was just dreadful. He was frigging woeful. If I say we were robbed by the officials, it's technically true. But it wasn't like a Mr. Singh game where we were robbed by the official against Bournemouth all those years ago.
So it wasn't like Ashton Gate or anything like that.
No, it certainly wasn't like Ashton Gate. No, for those of you with sort of shorter memories than remembering back when we played Bournemouth away and got just done over by Mr. Bloody Singh in the last game he ever refereed. I said after about 5 minutes, I said to P, this referee's got money on 0-0. Because not only was he giving every little thing that he could think to give a foul for, he was also letting Aldershot take as long as they wanted to do anything. 5 minutes in.
You know what? I've long believed that it is a problem in lower league. And I do believe it will come out at some point that refs and match fixing is not looked into properly because we're smaller games. I remember I saw the game against Western Supermare at home in our title winning season. And I've never seen anything like it. I've just never seen a ref behave that way. From 5 minutes in, they were wasting time. They were, and nothing was done about it for the whole game. And I just couldn't. And every single thing we did wrong, there were yellow cards flying around. And from their side, they were allowed to do whatever they want. And I have to say, throughout the years of going to watch Torquay, I've seen some really dodgy stuff happen in games. I've seen lots of players give away corners really randomly, things like, you know, just almost kick the ball out, and it wasn't because they were rubbish. It was just really out of flow with the play. So it's a separate point to Aldershot, and we'll go back to the game in a minute, but I reckon there is some sort of scandal about fixing to come out in lower league at some point.
It would surprise me not one little bit. Was it Matt Letitier said he used to have like 100 quid a week on himself or something to in games he was in, for there to be a throw-in in the first 19 seconds. So we would take kick-off and just smash the ball out of play and collect his winnings.
Yeah, there's lots on it. And like there's people that go to games and report what's just happened before the betting companies get it, right? They do it in tennis a lot. So like there's certain people, they'll watch the game and they'll get in contact with their contact before it comes onto the website and they'll put the bet on. So that's, I reckon it's happening, and I think no one's really looking into it in the league.
Be honest, it would not surprise me because we've so many markets now. You know, it's not like the old days where it was, we need Ballard on really to tell us more about this, but not like the old days where you would pick a team to win. You go, who's going to win this game or will it be a draw? And that's kind of what you had, even if you had a long list of those. You might occasionally get something like first goal scorer or something else. But none of this, like, will there be over 14 throw-ins and six people to get, but it's like you can manipulate that very easily, very, very easily. If you're involved in the game, you can make that happen all day long.
And you can make it happen without screwing your team over, right?
Yeah.
If you're told to give away three throw-ins, you can do that.
It's not like, you know, where a goalkeeper would have to actually physically sling the ball in his own net, you know, like Sean McDonald to score an own goal. Well, it's going to be pretty obvious, isn't it? But no, potentially you're right. I'm not saying that necessarily, you know, money has changed hands or anything here. That's not really kind of what I meant. But sort of that's kind of how it felt, was that the referee would have been happiest with a 0-0 draw. And that kind of came to a head 25 minutes in, where both teams had done nothing for the first 10 minutes. They both just kind of got it and booted it as hard as they liked. And a lot of the time that would lead to an up and under, two players would come together, the referee would blow his whistle and kind of arbitrarily point one way or the other. He didn't have anything to do with what had happened in front of his eyes. He just sort of blew his whistle and pointed. Give a free kick. If it was for us, sort of not a lot happened. If it was for Aldershot, one of theirs would go down. Oh, can you get the trainer on? Oh, I think I've got cramp 3 minutes in when it's 0 degrees. All this nonsense. And then we actually got hold of the ball. I think McDonald actually made a decent save from an effort they had. Mac made a decent save, and that kind of spurred us into life. It woke the crowd up a bit, and we started playing some quite nice football. We were playing out from the back. We were getting it wide. We were finding some fairly good channel balls out to Dan Martin, who played quite nicely, and obviously through to Sinclair Armstrong with his pace. But these weren't sort of like the Danny Wright style or up to Josh Umera last season. They weren't just 60 yarders. We weren't rolling out to Perrett and going, right, put your boot through that. This was more a case of working some space out wide, quite nice triangles, and then getting the ball in behind the fullbacks. And we put a really nice ball through for about the third time. And Sinclair Armstrong chases the ball through. The defender does really nicely to get goal side. But Sinclair's brain is much too big for this division. And he can see what's going. We can all see what's coming because their clown shoes of a goalie has come hairing out right in front of us. Because we were this was at what is kind of the home slash away end, right in front of us. There wasn't a shout, there wasn't a call, there was no keepers, there was no kick it, there was no clear, there was no away, nothing. Neither man said anything, neither man looked at each other, they both looked at the ball, and they just ran into each other. And Sinclair knew this was coming. He didn't need to touch the defender, and he didn't touch the defender. Two of them come together, the ball just rolls past both of them. Sinclair, I like his style. Instead of just kicking it into the net, he dribbled it up to about half a yard out, smashed it into the back of the net as hard as he could, only to turn around and see the lino waving his flag, pointing for a free kick for Aldershot. We're all doing our throw. All our players come over, start talking to the ref and the lino. Fairness to Armani Little, he did come over and start pulling players away and being all right, I'm the captain, you lot go away because you'll get booked, etc. So he did the captain's job, spoke to the ref, ref was having none of it, gave them a foul, minus about 15 minutes of treatment because the two idiots had run into each other. So that was that, really, was kind of exhibit A from the referee stitching us up. And then he sort of just allowed Aldershot really to waste as much time as they liked. Like they were taking... getting on for a minute to take a throw in. And you're going, come on, ref, you can see. And of course, we're all telling him, 300 Torquay fans are all telling him, and he's having none of it.
It's really, that's not fun football for anybody.
No, it's, well, you know, I didn't go, it was 0 degrees, bordering on about minus 10. It was a 4-hour journey home. It was already pitch dark and like 9:30 at night or whatever. We don't want to stand and watch 22 blokes milling around in a field. We want to watch a football match. But a referee was intent on not letting that happen. So the referee didn't help himself, didn't help us. To a degree, we didn't help ourselves. But that's more a limitation of the personnel we got in the building than anything else. Players that were out there played probably as well as, not as well as, you know, fucking hell, we beat Wealdstone 5-0. That was playing as well as we could have done. But they did not, anybody really played that badly. Nobody had a really awful game to let us down. We could have done with more quality from wide, I'll give you that. Jake Andrews particularly could have missed the first man with some set pieces. That might have made a nice change of pace. But sort of really beyond that, it was just a question of not quite being able to have the quality to find that final pass. Build-up play was really good. We passed all round Aldershot. They didn't get near us. And then we couldn't quite find that final ball, which was really disappointing because, to be honest, as much as we deserve, well, I mean, both teams really in the Barnet game, I think, deserve to be fined for impersonating football teams. Should have been 0-0, shake hands, go home. We did deserve to win yesterday. Aldershot were atrocious. They were. I've seen Dover this season, not against Torquay. I've seen Dover against Altrincham. Dover are better than Aldershot were last night.
I think it is alarming how bad our away form is. And with a tough game coming up the weekend, it was a real shame to pick up no points from Barnet and Aldershot. And you know, looking at the table now, we're starting to flirt with looking a bit like we're in trouble. Obviously, it's so tight in the National League. It's not something I'm particularly worried about at the moment. But Matthew, what do you think about, obviously, you're not going to feel positive about the result, but what do you think, you know, what do you think about the result from Aldershot on Tuesday?
It didn't surprise me. But what Matt has just said, I think it just rings true with so many games this season. I think, despite the fact that we do concede a fair few goals, I think our defence is pretty much fine. I think we're pretty set there, as long as, you know, you've got Perrott and Lewis in the middle and not certain other players. On paper, that midfield should be fine. It should be pretty good for this level. You've got Little, Lemonhay Evans, who I was pretty excited to see him playing last night. I don't know if he made much of an impact, but them two, Moore and was it O'Connell or whoever, should be all right. Should be enough to get you through a game. It's up front where there isn't really much. Sinclair Armstrong is all right, but as long if you don't give him anything, then that's where you're going to have problems. And we just keep having this problem where you can't get any service to the attackers. Final ball is always missing, whereas it certainly wasn't a problem last season. But
I imagine when I see us play it around on the floor, I think we can play that game. But for some reason, we get so drawn into doing a lump at the front, and I don't know why we didn't play that football last year. You know,
I think it's confidence partly, because I think nobody is guilty of not trying in the team. I think everyone's trying their best, but they're just bereft of confidence, and they're just not. There's players with quite obvious limitations. I think we're just going to have to get used to the fact that some of the players who've been brought in are not up to the standard, unfortunately, that we were last season, certainly. But
they're only going to be
worse. I've seen far worse at Torquay.
Yeah. I mean, we've had much worse teams in recent memory, very recent memory. I think you probably have had
3 years
started
ago.
Going. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, that team that went down under...
Well, you had a revolving door of players every single week almost, and you never knew who was going to turn up, and that was awful.
And we had players walking around looking like they didn't want to be there as well. Like you said, Matthew, I'm not seeing that with these players. I just think they're not good enough. No. Not good enough.
Yeah, they're trying their best, but unfortunately, some of them are not good enough.
Yeah, you can't blame them for that. You know, they will, those players, they'll be out of here come July or whenever it is the contracts are out, the 1st of July or what have you. That they'll be straight out the door. And to be honest, they probably know that. You know, naming no names, but our third choice centre back has got to know that he's nowhere near the standard of a professional footballer. That's not his fault. I'm nowhere near the standard of a professional footballer. The difference is I haven't been co-opted into being a professional footballer. You know, he's sort of, if I was on a 747 and somebody said, right, pilot's dead, we need you to come and land the aircraft. When we're a smouldering crater in the ground, it's no good the authorities going, well, this guy's clearly not a pilot. I said, wouldn't say I was a fucking pilot, did I? I mean, you know, it's just, I was told, come and land this plane or we've all had it. I was like, okay, I'm giving it a crack. Sorry, I never claimed really to be a pilot. And kind of Ali Omar really is not... He's not a professional footballer, but that's not because he won't try. It's not because he doesn't want to be. It's because he's just not good enough to be. And you can't blame the guy for that. He's got what he's got. If that's not enough, then that's not enough. So summer he'll go and we'll get an actual footballer in, and that'll be fine. It's not all Ali Omar. You know, I've just picked on him because I like the guy. And he came on yesterday and was just clown shoes again. All over the place, ball forward, routine header out for a throw. Joe Lewis would have headed it out for a throw. Guy Branston would have headed it onto the railway track in Guildford. And the Ali Omar thought, I know what I'll do. I'll let this ball bounce. And then just got completely out-muscled. He was only on 5 minutes. And I noticed something that he did that was just ridiculous. And, you know, the poor bastard. But there are several who are not good enough, and they know they're not good enough, and they know that they'll be in the bin. We've signed them because we're doing this season on the cheap, and we'll, when the salary cap kicks in and we've got a chance of competing with Furlough FC and Notts County and God knows who else, we'll go toe-to-toe with them then. And I'd back Gary Johnson, which is something we might talk about later. I'd back Gary Johnson over any other manager in this division to be given the same budget as everyone else and to sign the players that would win the division. Absolutely guarantee it. Does anybody else want to keep talking about a game we lost?
Two games we lost.
Because I've got a game that one of you can win.
Ooh.
But only one. Excited. Oh. The winner will be decided not by me, not by either of you, but by the listeners.
By the Yellow Army.
By the Yellow Army themselves.
Just to warn them all, I'm a really bad loser. So. Okay.
No, yeah, I'll have none of this. I'll have none of this gerrymandering. Thank you. From either side. Do either of you listen to Fighting Talk, the radio show on 5 Live on Saturday mornings when you're driving to an away game?
No,
you're missing out. It's good, Fighting Talk. It's like a sports game show. It's only on for an hour. It's presented by the Scottish guy who does the... Scottish or Irish? I don't know. I can't remember.
Didn't Colin Murray used to do that? Or does he still do it?
Oh, yeah, that's him. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I have heard it.
He's definitely not Scottish.
Is he not? No, he's something. He's
Northern
got,
Irish, isn't he?
He's like, Irish. Yeah, he's Celtic of some description. I don't know. He does it. The guests are normally pretty good. The games they play are pretty fun. One of the games that they play every week is called Defend the Indefensible, which is where Murray will say something heinous, I believe is the proper pronunciation, and the pundits in the final going head to head have to do their level best to defend that statement. So amazing. What I've got is three rounds so that we'll definitely have to have a winner of Defend the Indefensible. So I've got six different statements, three each, divided into rounds 1, 2, and 3. I'm going to give you the statement and tell you who's got to defend with their life, their honour, their reputation, that particular statement. None of it should be defamatory, so there shouldn't be anything in here that you can get sued for, but I disclaim all liability for that if it does happen. So I've tossed a coin, and it's ladies first.
Oh, okay, I'm ready.
So, Rowena, I need you to defend the statement, please. Gary Johnson should be sacked and replaced by Gary Owers.
I personally feel Gary Owers was not given enough time. He built a fantastic team. They just didn't ever get to shine, you know. And then he's got rid of. Gary Johnson gets brought in, takes all the glory with the team that Gary Owers have built. You know, so now I think it's time for Gary to come back and build that team back up again, so that we can have the best Gary back in again.
I've kind of divided these into groups as well. So I'm kind of hoping that the questions are vaguely similar. So... Matthew, I'm going to propose to you, and you've got 30 seconds to tell me that I'm entirely correct, that Kevin Nicholson driving the minibus was character building and not embarrassing. We should go back to doing that. Get Gary Johnson an HGV license.
Well, you see, the main thing about that is that it would massively save on costs to whoever we're paying for the coach that takes us to all these away games. And notice one thing, that when we went to Barnet on Saturday, all the fans got there way before whoever was driving that bloody coach. If that was Kevin Nicholson or Gary Johnson driving it, he wouldn't have cared. He would have smashed through the traffic. He would have found a new way through. He would have carved a way straight through that motorway, just like most of his signings did last season, carving straight through defences left, right and centre. Now, he would have been... There's no argument there. Get him a HGV license.
Nice. I like it. I think that's very good.
I totally misheard what we were doing for my first one. So, you know, don't hold it against me, crowd. I'm ready.
You're
now.
All right. That's okay. We'll just pretend that we said it the other way around. It will be fine. So, I like that. I think that's very good logic. I didn't dislike Rowena's initial position. It's just that I don't think it's going to get to the point. So, round two, then, back to you, Ro. The FA Trophy is a more valuable prize than the league title.
I mean, who wants a league title anyway? That's what I say. The FA Trophy, what's in the name? You get a trophy. I mean, yeah, you might get a trophy with the league title, but, you know, everybody loves the FA Cup, but when you say FA Trophy, it kind of sounds like that too. Like, the FA Trophy means you get to play loads more games against really obscure teams. You get to, like, travel all around the country and stand on the side of a pitch with no toilet and, no cup of tea. I mean, who wouldn't want that? I just sit in somewhere who won't even want to be in the league anyway.
Give me Gloucester away again, or Concord Rangers away.
Please.
I think I liked the
that's,
year.
No, we got that's to character make... building.
That is character building. Yeah, I rather like the year we got.
And you know, it gets all your geography up. We all know geography from being in the lower league. All these obscure towns, I know them all.
Did that come up on?
Them aren't even towns.
Did somebody say that on Twitter?
I think there was a conversation about it recently. Yeah. But actually, it is something that we've talked about in our household because. My partner, he's really good with like geography, but he knows no geography in this country. And I'm like, I know all these weird places because of Torquay. So,
yeah, who else would have been to wherever it was we played? Like Northwich, Victoria. Who the hell knows where Northwich is? I do.
Well, it's only about 10 miles or so from where I'm from, so I know where it is.
Oh, well, okay, you know where it's from. I mean, that's cheating, being from a place. You can't have that. Right, Matthew, you've got, in a similar vein, your second round is Notts County should be automatically promoted no matter who wins the title because getting big crowds in is more important than winning football matches.
I've always thought that football skill and league position is really only secondary to crowd size. The only table that I'm interested in is the attendance table, and Notts County with their big draws for their players. You've got Kyle Cameron leading that squad, Frank Vincent on the bench somewhere, Aaron Nemec, don't know where he is, but he's probably there somewhere. That's all I want to see, and for those reasons I think they should just be automatically go, just send them up now, send someone else down now and get it over with. It's where they deserve to be.
Nice, thank you. I like that. That's another very solid effort. I think we're going to struggle with these last two because these really are dreadful statements.
I'm scared.
they both relate to a match that none of us want actually to think about. But Rowena, your statement is Simon Mather deserved his promotion to the Football League considerably more than we did.
I mean, you know, if we're honest, do we even deserve a promotion to the Football League? I'm not sure that we do. You know, we like being in the conference, don't we? We enjoy it. We play average football sometimes, and you know, maybe, you know, we're better off down here. Do we deserve to go to the league? I don't think so. I think we are much better focusing on the FA Trophy, as I have already argued.
That excellent bonus points, I think, for calling back to a previous round. That's very good. I like that. Right.
Let's not forget, at least he gave one of our goals.
One of the three. Well, while we're talking about that, why don't you ever go at defending the statement? Hartlepool with a much better side at Ashton Gate, and Coverland's goal was much more than we deserved.
Well, I mean, obviously, that's not indefensible at all because, you know, the scoreline never lies for football, does it? Only the team which is supposedly better doesn't end up losing, especially on penalties, after equalising in the 96th minute or whatever it was, and then supposedly dominating for all of extra time, but still losing the game. That up there, does it? I think the team in blue and white were superior in every way at that day. Please don't hate me.
Perfect. There we are. So thanks for playing. I think that was a good game. We're going to ask our head of social media to ask listeners to tell us who you think did better out of Row and Matt. So vote on the poll that Nick French will tweet to you, however he does that. And we'll go from there. What are we talking about next? Is it Halifax?
Let's talk about the game coming up. So two things to talk about on Saturday. So obviously the game itself, and amazingly, we have now joined the Her Game 2 campaign, and it is the first official Her Game 2 game on Saturday. And in one of the stands, the Woolen Stand, is it Woolen End? I always forget because it used to be our away end. women are you're going to have to get a free ticket, and they're encouraging as many women and girls to come. I did make me laugh that they said females. I don't know why. Just sort of reminded me of Friday Night Dinner. I think I prefer women and girls. Females sounds a bit strange, but I think it's absolutely great, and it's really brilliant. What I've been really encouraged by this whole way as well is seeing so many male fans get behind the campaign and tweet to the club and show their support. And if we hadn't signed up, seeing that happen has been such a positive. But we have, and it's absolutely great, and I can't wait to be involved in that atmosphere and see what it's going to be like on Saturday. The game itself, I'm a little bit more concerned about. They seem to have a rather prolific striker at the moment. What do you think about that, Matt Hartman?
I'm pleased for the guy, because I always quite liked him. I think he was on my list, Billy, as one of those players that we probably could let go in the summer, because we seemed to have enough quality going forward. We scored a lot of goals last year. We didn't really need to keep hold of a guy who was only ever really a bit part player. And it turns out that what we should have done is kept hold of him and Josh Umerah, and between them, that we'd have had about 40 goals this season. Very, very pleased for Bell that he's doing well, because he's a nice guy and there's, you know, I had no animosity towards him. He probably didn't ask to leave, I shouldn't think. I don't know, but I don't get the impression that he wanted to go. He didn't, you know, you won't, for example, if you see Will Taylor in the pub before the game, he won't be holding a flag depicting a rat with Billy Waters' face grafted onto it, for example. He was on the list to be released and he was released. The fact that he's turned out to be the most prolific bags man in the division this year is kind of
not typical. Something.
Yeah, I mean, it's typical, but it isn't. Incredibly, it's something that you just wouldn't have seen coming, I don't think. If you'd have had your money on, as I know somebody that appears on this podcast regularly did, he's had two tranches of money on for the division's top goal scorer, a tenner on Dan Goldman and a tenner on Billy Waters. I have a feeling that one of those will pay out and the other potentially will not. So, you know, it was a bit of a punt. It was supposed to have been fun, not a serious bet, and it turns out now to be quite correct. I think if Gary Johnson takes a look at you and says, no, I can do better than you and I don't think you add enough to my team, you can probably trust that we can do better and he doesn't add enough to the team. The fact that we have done significantly worse and he has gone on to great things, I don't think anybody saw that coming. Halifax, I don't think, signed in with the intention of him being the division's top scorer.
I think he's definitely a classic case of perhaps him and Gary Johnson just didn't work. You know, we've all worked with managers where they don't get the best out of us, we don't enjoy their style. It's not necessarily anything wrong with either side, there's just not that connection and it doesn't quite work out. So what would be your score prediction then for Saturday?
Oh, Jesus. I mean, he's going to score, isn't he? Because he's going to score. I'm kind of interested to see what his reaction on your thing about him and Johnson. I wonder whether it will be an Adebayo style knee slide in front of the home dugout or what. In terms of a score, to answer the actual question you asked, I think we will lose 3-1 with Billy getting two and somebody else getting one and the lemon to score our goal, a consolation in the 86th minute.
It's close to mine, but I've got 3-0 to Halifax in mind. Oh, and although Ben Curry always tells me off when I'm negative, the last time I haven't been negative since and haven't got any right. So I'm going with, unfortunately, 3-0. But I hope we'll give them a good game. And, you know, I hope I'm wrong as well. And perhaps, you know, with the her game too, and that being the first game, maybe the team will feel a little bit motivated about that and want to put on a really good game. So let's hope so. How about you, Matthew? How do you feel about Saturday?
I was also going to go for 3-1, but then that stopped my thunder. But I had a look see Billy Waters' goal scoring record just recently, and he's actually only scored 2 goals since the 5th of October. And both of those goals came on.
We'll soon change that for him, Matthew.
Absolutely. He's gonna score any number of goals. But both of those goals came against Dover at the weekend. And he's like, I could score 2 goals against Dover. I'm a goalkeeper. So we'll probably lose, but sling Ali Omar on in the 89th minute, he goes up for a corner or goes on as a striker and pops one into the back of the net.
Okay.
Wrong net, but
no, the wrong, yeah.
You never know. We'll probably lose, but
Let's hope we get a good result, because it's been really, really nice to see the club doing some positive things recently. So obviously we've mentioned her game too, but they've also joined Andy's Man Club, which is absolutely great. And sort of opening up that conversation between men, talking about their mental health, and meeting and talking together, and the club supporting that, and men and male fans being able to see that, and you know, being maybe pushed to go forward and chat to people. To help reduce those suicide rates amongst men is absolutely great. So I think off the back of that good news, it'd be really good to get a good result within that time frame, because you know, it's a shame that we've had 2 losses following those two announcements.
The all the club's activity off the pitch lately is a shining light compared to everything else going on. It's great to see, and also universally positive reaction as well to everything, which you would expect or you'd hope so anyway. But good to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't argue with any of it. If it had come a week earlier, maybe I wouldn't be disallowed from following the club's official Twitter, because I did lose my temper.
I didn't see you lose your temper. You've been blocked.
I have, yeah, because I used what some prudes call the curly C word at them, because I just lost my temper with them, just completely ignoring her game too. Quite
it's really frustrating to be. I feel like we're all on mute or something, right? Like even just a little bit of engagement. Like I, to be honest, I'd sort of given up, because I had to give up with the sanitary items thing as well. You're talking to nobody, and I'll always maintain that, you know, the positives are great, but like, why can't our club communicate with us on Twitter? I just don't understand it. You see all these other lower league clubs having a laugh with their fans, really engaging with them, and ours just will not do it. And I just don't understand it.
No, it makes no sense. It's something else that's free. And, you know, we're always whinging about budgets and God knows what else. And, you know, this kind of thing is free. You can forgive toilets from the 19th century if something that's free is done and you have a really great relationship with the social media person, who I think is a woman now, social media woman at Torquay. But you know, you just don't. And it's some of these, they get you plenty of attention around the world, and it all helps. Every little helps. And we just don't seem to want to do any of that. We seem almost like my dear old Nan might have said, penny wise and pound foolish. Like we're all very good at scrimping a penny here and a penny there, saving £100,000 or whatever, shutting the academy and then losing out on 20 million quid's worth of resale value for Callum Morton and Kiefer Moore and Shagger Reed and one or two others that were in that academy, and then pissed off to Exeter and Plymouth and Truro and God knows where else, and are now worth loads of money. You know, it's just stuff, little tiny things like that. And having a bit of a something on Twitter. I mean, the biggest bloody interaction we've ever had with the club on Twitter was when previous incumbent Brainbox Paddy tweeted his bloody shopping list or something, didn't he? He put a load of those little emoticons on and we're all guessing at play. Oh, it's Luke Waterfall. It's got to be Waterfall signing. And it turns out that he just fat-fingered into the keyboard and tweeted a load of old nonsense.
And we've missed opportunities as well. You know, like that documentary on Netflix that we're on, like Netflix is global, right? And we're actually in the documentary called Losers, but people will have started following the club from that. They will have done. And they'll have tweeted the club from that, because people pick second teams. People pick second teams from all over the world, and they're like, oh, I like this small English side. And then they would have paid for streams during COVID. They would have paid to watch the playoff final, they would, you know, they might buy a shirt. And if the club just doesn't engage back, they're just going to be like, oh, just find somebody else that yeah. will chat to me.
That's it. And we've got a Brazilian correspondent. If you're not following TUFC Brazil, you absolutely must. A, you learn a load of useful Portuguese phrases. I can now say highlights in Portuguese in case I want to get my hair done in a new style when I'm on holiday in Fuerteventura or somewhere. I might be able to go and go, momentos melhores. And just point at my hair and they'll go, hey, highlights, this guy speaks Portuguese. Let's give him a discount.
I think they speak Spanish in Fuerteventura, don't they? Belong to Spain.
Oh, do they? I'd pass. I don't know.
Sorry to ruin that.
Oh, well, I've stitched myself up. Remember, we've never played them in a cup game, in a trophy game away, so I don't know where it is.
Exactly.
That's the trouble I've got.
You need the FA trophy is what you need. That's what I need,
yeah. And if while you're voting, you can vote for me. I'm going to make Nick put me on the thing as to who won. Did I win for asking questions? Okay, they speak Spanish. Well, whatever. They speak something. They'll understand. It's better than shouting Mio Wanto Fulo Englisho as loud as you can while you're waving your copy of the Sun newspaper at a poor local sort of bar worker there. How hard would it be for them to just get all excited about stuff and just
hopefully, looking on the positive side, hopefully this is the start of engaging with us more, and maybe, you know, as you said, they've got somebody new on social media, maybe after she finds her feet a little bit and it's given a little bit more freedom, she may start to interact with us a little bit more, perhaps don't swear at them next time. Well, do you think you'll get unblocked? Do you have to ask?
I credit to her, I think. It was either Luce Ford or the Her Game 2 account, I think, did actually ask if the official club account would have, but they haven't yet, which is just a question of me swapping into another account to view the tweets that they have sent. And obviously, it's very easy for me to continue to swear at people. But I did fully lose my temper because it was just taking us so long. Just send the tweet. What were we waiting for? We were apparently waiting, we couldn't announce it yet. Lad, you're not signing Messi. You know, we're not getting in case another club steals the deal from us.
It was the media embargo. They couldn't announce it. You know, they didn't want to say it in case the Herald Express jumped the gun.
Yeah. I mean, even just a small tweet or something like anything that was just like, even the eyes emoticon or the smallest thing that basically said to us, we're looking at this, would have made everybody back off a little bit, would have made us feel like they were listening a little bit. But even, I guess what's difficult is even with them taking it on, I felt the tweet should have been, we've heard you, we've heard you and we want to do this. And there was much more of a feeling of like, they've done it and they sort of didn't really want to hear from us. And maybe that's wrong, but I guess it's just that sort of lack of communication from them with us. And it'd be a real positive for the new year if like they just start to engage with us a little bit more. Because I've stopped engaging with their tweets, if they don't bother getting back to us on anything. I kind of engage with fans' tweets more now than I do with the clubs.
Yeah, you don't miss anything by being blocked by them, to be honest.
I'm not blocked.
I'll tell you for free that you don't miss anything by not seeing it. If you were to unfollow them, for example, there's no, apart from your match day feed being slightly shorter because you don't have to wade through tweets of a game you were at, it's sort of, there's no vital information that you miss.
I'm going to get more enjoyment out of seeing their tweets though now that I know that you can't, so.
Well, I can, I just can't from an account that's blocked. It's not, it's not a big technical issue. I'm not like Bill Gates.
You might be on the list, They might be like, do not tweet.
Do not tweet at this man. Yeah, okay, fair enough. I'm out of things to say now. I think we've covered two depressing losses and then predicted a third loss, having complained about how depressing it is talking about losses.
Well, hopefully we're all wrong.
Nothing would give me greater pleasure than to be sat here talking about a Billy Waters own goal hat trick in a 7-0 hammering.
Forgetting what team he's on, starting to put it in the wrong net.
He's mysteriously driving away in a new sports car from the ground that Gary Johnson gave him the keys to in a brown envelope just before the game. That'd be a way to announce your new friendship, wouldn't it? Shall we let the listeners carry on with their evenings?
Yeah, thank you for listening to us all today. It was great to have two Matts on, or that Matthew and Matt, better than the Sams incident. So it's goodbye from Matthew Roberts.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Matt Partman.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from me. Goodbye.